Otakuology Podcast with Otaku Mike Engine Graves.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Otakuology Podcast. I'm your host, Otaku Mike. With me, as always, is my heterosexual life partner slash co-host, Jen. How's it going today, buddy?
Pretty good.
I totally thought you were going to enter with names from the manga, so you were going to be the Santa Claus guy, and I was going to be the wild-haired voodoo master.
Oh, yeah, he actually has a name. It's like Antonio.
Stupid name. It's not as cool as the other guys.
I was looking in the back of the book, and they don't even, like, he's like, we don't introduce his actual name in the book. So I'm just going to introduce it here. And I'm like, oh wow. My God. But today we are looking at a 2007, well, in Japan it came out 2007. Over here in English, in America, it came out in 2010. So it was a while before it came out over here. We're looking at a shonen manga series written and drawn by Haro Aso. If you don't know who that is, he is the creator of Zom 100 and Alice in Borderlands, which we have covered his previous work on the podcast. We covered Zom 100, and we both initially liked Zom 100, correct?
Yes.
We did. And then I think we both stopped reading it.
I just haven't bought more, and you said you didn't like it anymore.
I didn't like it anymore. But we're looking at this manga. It's called Hide and Closer. It's published by Shonen Sundays, which is a offshoot of Viz. And it is categorized as action. You know, what?
You know, there's one thing I feel like you should tell everybody is how you obtained.
Okay.
Your
but before I was going to say, this the genres for this is adventure and fantasy and comedy is what the genres are. I would also put like supernatural in this as well. But yeah, so sure. I obtained this. Well, I guess I could say I originally, when I was getting into manga, like when I was picking up like Monster Musume and stuff like that, like when I was first getting into manga, I found the first two volumes of this at a Half Price Books.
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, oh, this is a fun little manga. And I couldn't find any of it anywhere else at the time. So I was like, right. I'll get rid of it. And so a mutual friend of ours, Justin, who I like to refer to as Justy.
Yes.
Justin got the first, I want to say, four or five volumes. I think it was for the first four volumes of this.
Yes.
He got them from you.
Exactly.
And then he was like, I don't want these anymore. Whoever wants them can have them. And I was like, hey, man, you know.
After I had given him those, he ended up picking up the rest so he could finish it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Because, see, I only got the first couple of volumes. I think I was missing, like, maybe two or three volumes from it.
Okay.
Because he only sent me, like, the first half of the series, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought
he sent you all of it.
I want to say I was missing, like, the last two issues, maybe. Maybe, like, the last two or three issues. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's cool. Because, like, this is a series that, like, I liked. Oh, when I read it, I liked it. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll eventually get to it. Cut to a few years later after I got it. And we start the podcast and stuff. And it was a series that I wanted to talk about. Because nobody talks about this series, like, right, at all. So I was like, oh, this will be a fun little hidden gem to talk about. And eventually, I was trying to think of stuff to talk about. And I was like, I really want to go back to sort of sprinkling in more manga to talk about, because we have been talking about more anime and stuff like that recently. And I was like, let's get back to our bread and butter. Let's talk about some manga stuff, you know? And I was like, well, this Haro guy is like really popular at the moment. Let's talk about the first series that he actually wrote. So like, this was like the first series that he actually was published, and he wrote, he did a one shot before, but like, I guess that wasn't popular enough to be published over here. But this was his first work published over here. How did you obtain this? Did you just randomly grab it?
No, I mean, I picked this one up on purpose.
Yeah.
Way back then.
Because, like, the way it looked. Because that's what I was very, like, struck by, like, the cover of...
yes.
Because the art was, so different.
Right. That and then kind of, like, what the synopsis of the story was. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, this one looks like a good one to get into. Which, like, going back to the past, Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
It's funny because I originally got this one from when Write Stuff was around, like when I first did YouTube at like my 6 month mark, and I did a giveaway.
Oh, really?
And they sent me a bunch of stuff. Well, I did this, and I knew whenever I drew the name, when I drew Justin, I was like, oh, let me send him a couple extra volumes.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, whatever they gave me for free. And then I bought a few more and then sent him all that. And so I just think it's funny. I feel like I'm tickled pink about it that, you know, I sent it to him. But then my friend that I made like over a year later, you ended up getting it from him. And it's like, oh, man, maybe it was always supposed to like, you know, end up with you at some point, like in maybe. The universe.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just funny. Like, think about it. Like, what the chances of you and I like meeting,
true,
face to face, and everything else, and then a series that I sent to somebody else ends up going all the way to the other side of the continent, or not the continent,
the United States.
Yeah, the other side of the United States, because we're in the South, and it went to the North. And then it comes back past me, farther south, and makes its way to you. Like, that's almost canny. You know, it's canny how that happened.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very crazy. And I still actually have this series in my possession.
Right? I feel like you should be like, you should see if you have like a lab down there and be like, yeah, I need you to check and see if this DNA is still.
Oh, what DNA?
My DNA, like, be like, there's a fingerprint smudge right here on this page.
So I need you to sign my manga.
Yes, I can sign your baby. Goodness. But yeah, no, that's one of the things whenever we talk about Hiding Closer, like, either in passing or full-blown conversation, I always find funny is that how something I sent out, oh, Jesus, years ago, ended up basically coming back around to you, my podcast partner. And it's just like, it's kind of mind-blowing, you know, like, what chance is that? You know, is it like one in a zillion or something like that? You
I
know?
Guess. I mean, like, we kind of ran around and all ran around in the same, like, manga tube circle. I mean, Justin was the first person I met.
Well, that's like, true, but... I mean, as like fickle as Justin was about selling stuff, I would have never dreamed that he still had that.
Well, he just gave it to me.
Yeah, and then when you got it, I was like, what the hell?
He just gave it to me, and I was like, yeah, like, I'll take this.
I did not know that he still had it, you know, for the longest time, so.
But I mean, Justin's a good friend of ours, you know. He's a cool dude. So he technically made this podcast right here happen. We're talking about Hiding Closer today.
this episode brought to
this,
you
this
by
episode is Justin. Brought to you by is brought to you by Justy.
Justy.
But yeah, I mean, yeah.
I feel like we could have went down by AKA.
AKA.
AKA first time reading manga. AKA Justy Hook. AKA Amaskio J. AKA Starwing and Hawking. AKA, I don't know what it was before that, so I don't know.
He's now just Me Plus Manga is what his channel is now.
Yeah. See, AKA.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Which yeah. Whenever I always look at it in like my in my collection, like I always think of Justin.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, Justin gave me this, you know, whatever. Which it I'm really surprised.
It is a series that does stick out because of it being purple.
True, it is purple, and there's teddy bears on the side of it.
That's true.
Which one touch I really do like in each consecutive volume, there's a little, the little bear hide is on the side of it, and he's dressed up in a different costume. Like, I love that little touch. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. But let's get into this and talk about Hide and Closer Volume 1. I think it's, is it Closer or Closer?
Closer.
Closer? I kept saying Closer. Closer.
He's closing the deal.
So, our story starts out with basically the explanation of sorcery and stuff like that, and how, like, sorcery is like this forbidden art. And, you know, at times, you know, it could heal incredible illnesses. It can also inflict death on anybody. And we see these weird, like, sorcerers, and they're all, like, looking for this person who is going to take over the Sorcerer King's powers. Like, they're trying to find that person, and they're, like, they're looking for him in the United States and Romania. They're looking for him in Haiti. And they're like, you know, all, the power will be mine. We see all these different, I don't want to say factions, but like cultures of different sorcerers, which is really cool to see. And they're like, we're going to find this.
And I think in that aspect, it almost kind of seems like Shaman Kings.
Oh, no, most definitely.
I mean, Shaman King. That's another thing. Like, the way that this is definitely hits home, like, for anybody that likes Shaman King.
Yeah.
But
I would say, yeah, I would say
different cultures.
Different cultures. I would say it also kind of hits off with a little bit of Zatch Bell in the mix. Like, maybe like Shaman King and Zatch Bell somewhat inspired Hide and Closer. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see that a lot, actually. But I didn't think of the Shaman King aspect of it.
Pokemon?
I don't know about Pokemon. But I didn't think about the Shaman King aspect. Even like when I'm looking at these like different characters, I'm like, oh yeah, I can see a Shaman King influence from here, personally.
Oh, most def.
But after we get done with that, our story, our main character shows up. I don't know why I can't talk today. Our main character shows up, Shunpei Closer, and he is a young, was he in high school? I can't remember what age he is.
I think so.
He's in high school.
I don't know. I want to say he's in middle school.
Middle school, maybe going into high school.
Maybe
junior high school type of thing. We meet Shunpei, and Shunpei is he's a very interesting fellow, I have to say. He very much gives me the Deku vibes, almost. Like, he looks a lot like Deku. Deku looks a lot like him, I guess, because this came out in 2010.
This is true. Well, I mean, not only that, but like the kind of like crybaby aspect, I guess,
of the
characters.
And he's kind of like humming and hawing over all this stuff, and he's trying to like hide from these guys because they were playing like kickball, I think it was. Or they're playing like some kind of sport they're playing. I can't remember what they're playing. But he's not like the most popular kid around town. He's not that popular. And no. He like is clumsy. He He very much tries to get out of things that make him uncomfortable. He's like, oh man, I got to get out of here. So he ends up hiding from these like bullies from school, and he ends up going home to basically relax for the day, you know.
Right.
He goes home after a hard day at school, and he finds out that, he ends up and lays on his bed. He's like, oh, you know, thank God that that's over with, you know. And he looks over at this bear, and this bear is given to him by his grandfather. And Jen, for the people at home who can't see, what does this bear look like?
It looks like a regular teddy bear with like a purple fedora.
It's a red fedora. It's red. It's a red fedora.
I swear it was purple at one point.
It's red.
Heartbroken. I always imagined it was purple. Maybe I should have paid more attention to the beginning of the book.
Maybe.
Because I thought it was purple and yellow, but now that you're saying that it's...
No, it's red, and it has like a black stripe in the middle of it, like a band.
Yeah. Yeah, but then other than like the hat, it really just looks like a regular old teddy bear.
Yeah, he has buttons for eyes. He has a checkered tie almost around his neck. He's a very simple Build-A-Bear, you know. Very simple.
Build-A-Bear easy mode.
Easy mode. And we find out this bear is called Hyde, and he is given to Shun. Well, I'm going to call him Shun. Given to Shun by his grandfather. His grandfather is an archaeologist, and he's a very manly archaeologist. I would say if Indiana Jones and Gandalf had a baby, Shun's grandpa would be that love child, I would have to say.
Well, for me, he looks like, I think his name is Ravengar off of One Piece.
Uh-huh.
It was the old guy that taught Luffy how to use haki.
Okay.
He looks like that, but like with a big... like vampire hunter hat on.
Yeah, he's a very mysterious looking guy. He likes to smoke cigarettes and drink brandy. And he starts talking to Shu about how, you know, oh, you know, a man's got to forge his own path. You know, he can't be scared of nothing, you know. And we find out that Shu's grandpa has to go fly out to Africa eventually the next day. And he's like, take care of Hyde, and Hyde will take care of you, basically. And Hyde is going to be your new friend, you know. And Shun hopes eventually that when he grows up, he actually wants to be like his grandpa. And his grandpa is like, yeah, I know, you want to be like me. I'm so cool. He like busts out laughing. And I love this little scene where Shu's grandpa, which I don't even remember what his name is. I call him grandpa. He actually goes to give Shu some, like, it's like brandy or bourbon, I think it is.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, real men only drink bourbon. And he's got his little glass up, Shu does, and he's pouring him some bourbon. And his mom's like, hey, no, you can't give the child bourbon. Like, no, we can't do this, you know?
Don't do it.
After that, though, like, Shu's grandpa went missing. And it's been 6 years since his grandfather has gone missing. And, you know, Shu kind of jokes. He's like, oh, I guess I won't be as cool as he, like my grandpa, you know. And we see this mystery guy walk up to the Shu's house. And he, like, kind of dresses up like a delivery man-ish. He leaves a package, and Shu picks it up, brings it in. And what mystery happens?
Package?
What happens to be in this mystery package, Jen?
A stuffed monkey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happens when Shu takes the stuffed monkey out of the box.
Nothing really. It's just kind of there for a couple seconds.
Uh-huh.
And then ends up going off the rails as like a creature of destruction.
Very much a creature of destruction, I have to say. And so this monkey starts to like come alive.
He's out for blood.
He is out for blood. He comes alive. He starts to talk. And he's like, you know, I'm gonna get you so-and-so's grandchild. You have inherited the power of the Sorcerer King. That's what everybody's looking for, is the power of the Sorcerer King. And because Shu is related to his grandfather, the power of the Sorcerer King transfers to Shu. And the only way to get the power of the Sorcerer King is to basically rip out somebody's heart and eat it.
Right. So,
which is, I don't really know if I want that to happen to me. If I was in Shu's position, I would probably do what he does in this particular manga.
How would you know if you were in Shu's position?
Well, I mean, I would figure, you know, if a giant stuffed animal came to attack me, I would probably run away like a little bitch.
that would be your thing. You're like, oh shit, I've read enough manga in my life. Some asshole came to get me. I gotta be like part of the closer family.
Yeah. I feel like this manga kind of has a little bit of Toy Soldier vibes to it, if you remember that. Or Small Soldiers? Do you remember Small Soldiers?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I agree.
But yeah,
I agree. It does.
This monkey comes alive and he starts brandishing all these different like knives and stuff, and he starts trying to kill Shu. And Shu's like, "Oh my god! Like, what's happening? What are you talking about? Sorcery? I don't know what this sorcery is." And we get this really intense scene. Like, it almost turns into like a horror movie in a sense, where Shu is running away from the killer, like very much like this little, like, I don't even know if he's
Chucky,
like, almost like Chucky. He's like maybe like 12 inches, maybe like a foot tall, running around brandishing like a butcher knife, and he ends up like getting
just a plush monkey,
and he ends up getting control of like all the knives and stuff in the house, which I guess that's his power, because I know like each of them have like each of the different people have their own little powers, and this is where we get introduced to the second main character in this manga, is Hyde the Bear. Hyde the Bear finally wakes up, springs into action, and he's like, "Don't worry, I got this," you know.
Yeah.
Basically sucker punches this monkey, and the monkey goes flying, and we see Hyde, he has like these like knives like stuck into his arm. And this is one thing I really like about the manga, like the artwork, is like,
yeah,
the mangaka, he doesn't pull any punches when it comes to like showing violence to like stuffed animals.
Yeah. He probably didn't have to, because, you know, there's not any blood, you know.
He, like, shows them, like, getting cut up or decapitated and stuff, but he does it in such a really good way, like, in such an effective way. Like, I'm like, ooh, man, like, that's got to, like, hurt.
It's going to take out my stuffing.
It's take out my stuffing and whatnot. And, like, Hyde even has, like, some stitching and stuff around his body. So, you know, he's probably been through it a little bit. And Hyde likes to, he likes the finer things in life. He likes his chocolate cigars, and he likes his honey, like, obviously.
Honey in a mug.
He puts his honey in, like, a little, like glass, and he, like, drinks it like brandy, yeah, almost, or bourbon.
In a high roller glass, yeah.
Yeah. And what this surprises Shu, and Shu does what he does best. He runs and cries like a little bitch, and he runs away. I think I would run away too in this predicament if I was in this put in this position. I would have been like, "What the fuck is going on here?"
Right.
Like, I don't know what's going on here.
Watch The Bride of Chucky too many times to know this shit's going bad.
Exactly. You know. And Hyde's like, yeah, you know, I got this. I'm going to take him on. And he's like, but I need your help first. I need your help, Shu, you know.
Right.
You have I can't reach it. You have the power to help me. And Shu's like, oh, I'm out of here. And he's like, I need you to unzip my zipper.
Right.
And he has this zipper on his back and he can't reach it. And he has his little stubby bear arms. And he's like, I can't reach it. I need your help. And this is where, like, we get this really intense fight between the monkey and Hyde, which I really like. The action is drawn in a very dynamic way. And it's very much your typical shonen, but it's not your typical shonen, if you get what I'm saying.
It's your atypical shonen.
Atypical shonen, yeah. And but Shu finally comes back. He's like, no, I can't do this. I can't start keep crying and running away and whatnot. I gotta help. And he goes to find Hyde, and as Hyde is in this very intense fight with the monkey guy, and he basically unzips Hyde's back and pulls out a giant chainsaw called Texas Chainsaw.
Yep. A giant demonic chainsaw.
It is a demonic chainsaw. And he gives it to Hyde, and Hyde basically goes to town. And this is Hyde's weapon, is a chainsaw.
Weapon of choice.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, I really love that aspect of this, because everybody else seems like they have like magic powers and stuff, and then like Hyde's is, oh no, it's a chainsaw. And you're
it's a chainsaw.
You're like, what in the world?
What in the world is going on?
Right.
And then we find out more about the types of magic that they're using. They're basically putting cursed objects into these like dolls or stuffed animals. And the only way to basically kill one of these beings, these new magical beings, is to destroy the cursed object. Like you can cut them and decapitate them all you want, but they'll still be alive and they'll still come for you. And that's where we find out, you know, somebody is actually controlling this monkey, and it's the guy who dropped off the box. And which I found that was really interesting, having the cursed object scenario. Yeah. And it when the fight is actually over, we find out that if the curse, whoever put the curse on to the object, the curse ends up going back and affecting the person who put the curse on the object.
Right.
Which is a really interesting to think about. Like, what kind of curse did you put on this object? And like, does it kill you? Like, or right. do you just see, get like really bad like athlete's foot or something? You know, like,
right. See, and that's one of the things that I don't feel like is ever really fully explained. Like, the curse that comes back, you would think it would be tied into the power, but it never seems like it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You'd think it would, like, involve, like, maybe, like, what's it called? Like, 1,000 cuts, you know, or something like that?
Like does it actually, like, you know, kill the person? Because later on, they fight two other people, and one of them gets put into a hospital, but like the first guy, we don't really hear from him after the first chapter or two.
I think it's because he dies.
Does he die?
I think he does, because doesn't his truck like fall off a bridge?
I think it does. Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah. Let me double check.
That's why we. That's why what we were joking about earlier. We never actually got a name, because he never showed back up to have one.
Yeah, yeah. That is true.
The bridge falling guy.
The bridge falling guy, yeah. But after this, This whole fight. What happens after this whole fight?
Hyde and Closer basically talk about the stuff with the abilities and all that a little more. Because it's like, oh, you know, my grandfather left you for me to basically protect me. But wait, you're moving? What?
Yeah.
And then I know, like, we just kind of, like we talked about earlier, that you thought there were more chapters, but there's not. It speeds through pretty fast, because I feel like right after that, like, maybe there's a little bit of time lapse that we don't really know as the reader too much. But then it almost jumps back into, like, the next fight.
Yeah, because it really, after that, it very much, like Hyde starts talking about, like, the sorcerers, and they have, like, accessories and stuff and whatnot. And then we get into, like, a somewhat flashback, you know, where, like, Shun was like, oh, I had no idea my grandpa was a sorcerer, you know, it doesn't seem real, but I know, like, you know, I'm remembering things. And we go back to this flashback where his dad actually, and his grandpa starts to teach him about, like, basic sorcery skills and how, like, you know, to create a barrier and like a fence and stuff. We have to put, like, objects down and use, like, magical powers to, like, basically, like, create force fields around yourself, which I wasn't really sure how he went about doing that. Like, if he, because they say, like, you know, you have to believe in yourself to create the magical, like, powers and stuff, like the barriers, but you also have to get the other person to believe in you as well, or to believe in the spell, I think it is. Is that right? Correct? Is that right?
Yes.
That's where I was kind of confused. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
On the...
like, the way the powers work.
That you believe in yourself.
Is it that what it is?
Yeah, you have to believe in yourself for your guy to be more powerful, because when you kind of, like, lose the doubt of things, you know, but then at the same point, like, your creature has, like, its set of magical output, and then you have your set of magical output. Mm-hmm. So it works kind of like, I don't know, it works weird. Like, you give a part of your magic power, it seems like, to put it into this creature, which his grandfather did. And then from there, like, now he's building off of his to do the berries and stuff with the little stones and all that.
Mm-hmm. And then we get into the next, I guess you could say, next big fight. Because that one, the first one was more like an introduction fight, almost, I guess you could say. Introduction to the world. Then we get into the wide open world of Hyde and Closer. So Shu is, it's like been a couple of days, or like the next day, I can't remember what it was. Like you said, there was some time that has passed between the first encounter to the next encounter.
Right.
Is what you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And Shu is like, oh man, you know, I can't believe that really happened. You know, I can't, my grandpa's a sorcerer. He's in science class. He can't really do anything right. He ends up, like, setting the chemicals on fire, and he's very much, he's still in that whiny boy phase. He thinks that, you know, he can't do anything right.
He's and like whatnot. Young Deku.
Very much like Deku. And he can't do anything right. And, like, this weird, like, walrus monster shows up, and things start, we go to, like, the next, it's like a different area. And this guy, he's at a hotel, and he, it's really cold in the hotel. And how would you describe this guy?
I would do a mix between a Russian sled dog driver and Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And we switch back and forth between Shu at school in science class and this
maybe a little piratey.
and maybe a little parody, and the Santa Claus guy who's basically like, ah, you know, I got this, you know, this country's so hot, you know, it wasn't cold enough for me, so I gotta stay in my room because it's too hot out there. And he goes and he's like, I'm gonna put this death curse on this like box. And we find he basically tells him, go find Shoe Closer, the heir to the Sorcerer King. And so they send this box to go find him. And we see the aftermath of what happened with Shoe at school. All of the kids are making fun of him, you know. Like, hey,
don't
you
think it's kind of funny seeing some of the people and like what they pick as like their like minion guy, I guess.
I do. And I feel like they kind of, I don't want to say sort of fit like the person in a sense. Yeah. Like this one's very themed. This next one coming up is very themed after, after like the Christmas theme, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, and you know, basically Shu is left to clean up the room because he made a big old mess. He can't do anything right. He did bring Hyde with him though, to school.
Right. He brought Hyde with him.
What happens next, Jin?
Then shit gets real, you know, because then you have this little box that opens up and reveals
The thing is it just popped in my head like the stupidest thing.
I was like, it reminds me how we were talking about how like childish he is. It reminded me of like Buddy the Elf, you know, where he's doing the little crank and then he's like trying to like make sure it doesn't come out of the box and go. And I was like, yeah, what if Buddy Elf had to go against like one of these?
Go against what exactly?
This jack-in-the-box, demonic, you know, Hellraiser, I guess, jack-in-the-box.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a very much a demonic jack-in-the-box. And just pops out. And he's like, are you happy, you dumb kid? He's like, I'm Harawataskai. Harawataskai is what his name is. And he is a cursed toy. And he loves eating what's inside of humans. So he's he's not a cannibal. He's a carnivore jack in a box.
I don't know if he's, I guess, a carnivorous, maybe.
Carnivorous jack in a box? Is it so, correct me if I'm wrong, like, because I'm kind of confused a little bit.
Yeah.
Do the toys have to eat the heart, or do the people controlling the toys eat the heart?
I think they work in conjunction together.
Uh-huh.
Like, if the toy eats the heart, then, like, the power goes through the toy into the person.
Uh-huh.
I think that's how it works, because I don't think that the person actually has to eat the heart. Because you always keep hearing, like, all of these other, like, beings, the little toys and stuff, like, basically say shit like that. Like, you know, oh, I'm going to eat your heart, or, you know, I'm going to, you know, take your essence, or I'm going to do something like that. Like, that seems like that's the rolling theme of a lot of stuff with this.
I just noticed, like, what the jack-in-the-box fights with. He has, like, a pickaxe thing and like a pair of tongs almost. I don't, they're not actually called tongs, but like clamps, I think it is what he has. Like metal clamps.
Yeah. See, I kind of thought it was almost like hiking gear.
It kind of looks like hiking gear almost a little bit.
You know, like the little things that you put on your ropes, like if you're like climbing. I thought it was kind of like that, you know, but I don't know. I guess we have to look at the origin of the guy and like what exactly
he is.
They would use part of this stuff from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't really see him climbing a mountain anytime soon.
Most definitely.
But
yeah, so we get into our second fight, which this one's pretty crazy. I think this one's crazier than the first fight, I have to say. Which, this is where our heroes get separated. Basically, the door slams shut. Shu is in the classroom, and Hyde is outside the classroom, I think it is. And he's just beating on the door, trying to get in. He can't get in for some strange reason. And they're like, yeah, you can't get into the room because there's a giant jack-in-the-box in the room. And the second you open the door or a window or a drawer, no matter what you open, the jack-in-the-box will be waiting for you. Because I guess that's his power. He comes out of whatever opens.
Yeah, his power is like dimension, I guess.
Yeah. Which is a pretty cool power to have. Like, oh, right. I'm going to open a drawer and pop out of the drawer.
Yeah, it really reminds me of from Hilda.
Mm-hmm.
And I only know this because you have somebody that really likes Hilda. but like the Nissas that go through the nowhere space. That's what it kind of reminds me of how they jump into like cracks of things and they pop up somewhere else. That's almost what it seems like this guy. But his is like more so not a crack. It's an opened thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, or like warp portals, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And this jack in a box is very much striking a chord with Shu. He's calling him a loser. He can't get anything right. Basically what Shu was saying at the beginning of this manga. So it's very much getting to Shu. And she's like, you know, believing in myself, that really is a joke. And we get this really touching scene where Shu has his back up against the door and Hyde is on the other side. And Hyde's like, no, that's not true. You know, back then you did run away. He says, you didn't run away. You stood your ground and fought. But in reality, he did run away to begin with, but then he came back and stood his ground.
Right.
Shu says, maybe it's time, you know, you got to start believing in yourself. Hyde says, maybe you start believing in yourself. And we get this really touching scene where like, you know, yeah. And they're like, we got to believe in each other basically. You know, and I like this scene. Cause it's very much like two friends coming together and like working together in a sense.
Yes.
Like we're working together to like take on like the common enemy.
Like Kyo and Zatch Bell.
Kind of, yeah. Like Kyo and Zatch Bell, yeah.
Like Yo and Amin Amaru.
Yeah.
You're like, so naming off all these things.
Stop naming all these things. But yeah, and we get this really, really touching scene. And Shu wipes away the tears. And he starts to like, he actually puts up a barrier. And I like the way the barrier, his barrier in particular, is used. Where it looks like pieces of stuff are coming together to form his barrier.
Yeah.
Like, I like the way it looks, you know, and he's like, he screams like, you know, you're not allowed to come here. And he puts down like a marker and an eraser. And that those two things make a giant barrier, which I love the way it, like how dynamic it looks. Cause that's one thing I think this manga does well and the mangaka does well is action. Like,
I agree.
The way this manga flows, it flows very fast when it goes to like action scenes. And the Jack in the Box basically can't get through the barrier, and the Santa Claus, grumpy, creepy Santa Claus man, which he has a name. His name is like Chillard Sky, which is such a weird, odd name. To like, oh, what's your name? My name is Chillard. Is that your first name or is that your last name?
But he's like Childsky.
Yeah, Childsky, Chillard, yeah. Chili, you know.
Yeah, that's his name is Childsky.
And he can't believe, like, he's like, oh my god, this is impossible. He made a barrier. You know, it's a basic spell. Even seasoned sorcerers need a medium to make one. And he's like, this dumb little kid has no training and he knows no spells. How can he put this together? He's kind of like baffled at it. And then as you know, the Santa Claus guy, Chillard, he is distracted and from controlling the his Jack in the Box, Hyde actually comes in and starts walloping on this Jack in the Box, which I love this scene where Hyde comes in and he's very much like, okay, you know, the big guns are coming in now. You know, I love how Hyde talks. I feel like he talks like a 1930s like gangster or 40s gangster. You know,
I can see that. Yeah,
he's like, you lousy bum, caught me off guard. I'm losing my touch. And he's like, you gotta be more. You can't be this careless shoe boy. That's what he calls him, shoe boy. That's what he calls shoe. You know, yeah. But he's like, but I'm glad I made it, you know? And Shu's like, what? How? Hyde, I use sorcery. He's very much like taken back. He's like, I actually used magical powers. This is so cool. You know? And yeah. Then we get into the big part where, you know, they pull out the Texas chainsaw, but they can't find like the Jack in a Box guy. He kind of like, he can't get through the barrier, so he decides that he's actually going to go above the barrier and try to get Shu, which is a very interesting tactic. He pops out of the ceiling tile,
yeah,
which I wasn't expecting at all.
I found what his weapons is, a pair of tongs and a crowbar.
Is it a crowbar?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be.
That's so weird. Like, why a pair of tongs and a crowbar?
I don't know.
But what happens next in this fight?
Texas Chainsaw, buddy.
Yeah. But I mean, how do they end up defeating this enemy? Do you remember?
Like, give me a second. Yeah, slice and dice.
So what they decide to do is actually open up a door and have Hyde stand in the middle of the room, and they basically cut him in half with the chainsaw, is what they do. That's how things end in this fight. Which I was very surprised that that's the way they decided to kill the Jack in a Box guy.
Yeah.
Like, you think it would maybe be a little bit harder, but I mean, it is what it is. But I like it though, that even before this, like before they come up with their big plan, like Hyde gets both of his arms cut off. And the guy's like, you can't do anything. You got no hands, Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dan don't got no legs.
See, one of the things that throws me off on part of that, with just part of that other stuff like that, is the fact of how many of these fights actually take place at his school.
Yeah, that is so weird. I think they all, like, both the two later fights in this, both take place at his school.
Yeah.
But the first one took place at his house. I guess because he's always at school, he's going to fight. At school? Does this take place all in school? Oh, that's weird if it does.
I don't think so. I think different fights take place in different areas.
Yeah. But I like this. I like...
We find the out about the six and stuff from Childski.
But I love the end of this fight where he's basically like, you know, shut up. He tells the Jagdbox, like, shut up with your stupid speech. And he's like, I'm going to kill you anyways. And he gets like this big, like, dark aura around him. Hyde does. And he ends up being able to pick up his chainsaw, even though he has no arms, which I'm very surprised. Yeah. But they end up defeating him in our gruesome fashion, just like the beginning fight. With the monkey, he cuts him in half, destroying the cursed object. And then, like you said, he ends up going about the six. You want to talk about this section about the six?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to find a list of names.
It doesn't have a list of names, if I remember correctly.
I know, I was looking it up.
So after Shu ends up fighting the Santa Claus guy, him and Hyde end up using their sorcery somehow. I don't remember how they do it, but they end up like getting like a magical tracking device type of thing and finding Chillard, the Viking Santa Claus. And they end up going to this hospital, tracking him down. And I love the expression on Chillard's face, like, oh my god, like, y'all actually found me? I can't believe, like, this is happening. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me, type of thing. Because he doesn't have any more, like, advantage to, like, kill them. Because he lost his cursed object and stuff. And all Shu and Hyde...
You remember what his cursed object was?
No, I don't remember what his cursed object was. Do you?
That's part of the stuff that I really like is the cursed objects.
What was his cursed object?
His was a coin.
It was a coin?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. What was the monkey guy's?
The monkey guy's was that stone thing, right?
Was it? See, I must have glossed over that, like, or maybe I just didn't pick up on the fact, like, of what the items actually were. But that's interesting, like, having a coin as your cursed object.
Yeah. I think his was the stone.
Well, the monkey guy's was the stone.
Yes.
And then
the Harawadoski. Uh-huh. Was the coin. with a star on it.
Yeah. Okay. See, I missed that. I missed that entirely. But that's good that you picked up on that. So they end up tracking Chillard Sky down. Chillard. They end up tracking him down and in the hospital, like I said before. And he's like, Shu says, like, all we want is information. Why are people after me? And what the hell is going on? And basically we find out that he has inherited his grandfather's powers, but nobody knows where his grandfather actually is. Like, he has gone off the map. Nobody knows if he's dead or alive. If his kid been kidnapped, nobody knows. We find out that all these other people are actually going to try to come for this power that Shu has, and there's six in particular who want to come for this power. There are thousands apparently, but we've already narrowed down six of the most strongest opponents that Shu is going to face. And what they end up doing with this time that they have is they're actually going to start trying to train. Well, what Hyde wants to do is start to train up Shu, because Hyde's not going to be able to really protect Shu forever. Or if Hyde's not around, it's like Shu needs help. Like, Shu needs to help himself. And so that's how they start working on like a defense and whatnot, and learning more about like defense magic, which I thought was really cool. Like, Hide's kind of like the sword, shoe closer is like the shield almost in this battle scenario.
Yeah. What's the other thing we've read where it's done that too, where there was somebody that like used shield powers and then somebody else I think was like the spear.
Shield hero?
No, I think it's something else. But I mean that's a good one too.
shield hero, that's the one I know.
That's what it's gonna be.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of where, and that's where I honestly thought that this manga was going to end, was with that, you know, like them working up and then going into the next volume. But no, we have actually three more chapters to go off of and talk about. You want to talk about the next big arc, which is called the Black Hair arc?
Yeah, this is when we get into Shindo, right?
Yeah, Shindo, yeah.
That's the guy that's in his class, but he's in like the soccer team.
Yeah, he's Mr. Popular.
Yeah. Mr. Popular. Which, yeah. I mean, I feel like this fucking like just desserts on a lot of stuff with this, because you have like the most popular guy who is obviously has to have a dark past of being some kind of a shaman user guy, and oh, you know, I gotta kill that one kid that,
yeah,
who knows, I've been with him like, you know, all year for school,
but oh, we're just meeting him now, but we're in the same grade.
Yeah. So, and then he has a little, I want to say it's called a Kamikuri doll or something like that.
It's a very like traditional like Japanese doll, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And it's called Tomiko.
Mm-hmm.
And its power is using its hair as a weapon.
Which when I first read this, I didn't know it was hair at first.
Did you think it was thread or something?
I thought it was maybe thread, or like at first I thought it was like just like almost like shadows, kind of like Shikamaru.
Yeah.
You know how like Shikamaru can control shadows? That's what I thought it was at first. Then halfway through the volume, I was like, oh, wait, this is hair. It's got like a Medusa type of like thing going on.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is their first time too, where we find somebody that's actually like different.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can tell, like, Shindo has probably practiced at a lot of this for a long time. Because, I mean, his fighting stuff is totally different than the other two guys. Because for Childski and, what was the other guy's name with the monkey?
Monk and Antonio, I think his name was.
Yeah. And Antonio, you know, like, as far as we know, like in that, they like weren't like in the battlefield with their creature, you know.
Which they do say that if you were in the battlefield with like your other, I don't know what they called it, like stuffed animal or doll, yeah. Like the thing is actually a lot stronger than it would be if you were like away from it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. Which gave me really big Zatch Bell vibes at this point.
So care. Yeah. And I mean, you know, when you got an unhealthy obsession with a doll.
Oh my god, it was so unhealthy. So, oh my god, like, which you can get into it. We can talk about it. He ends up showing up in the middle of the day and catches Shu and Hyde off guard. And we get into like his backstory into like why he wants the sorcerer powers.
Yeah.
Like the Sorcerer King powers. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Because didn't he have like a friend when he was younger? named Tomiko that was the same, kind of looked the same thing as the doll?
He had a friend or something, and the friend ended up moving away. And his Shindo comes from like a really wealthy like family.
Yeah.
And his dad is like very much like ruthless and power hungry. And he's like, oh, you don't need those people. Those people were useless.
Then he got an unhealthy obsession.
Yeah, he ends up getting this doll, and he ends up, I think his mom ends up teaching him sorcery?
Yes,
I believe his dad doesn't want him to do sorcery, I think it was.
Yeah. But, and then Tomiko is kind of, even though he's popular, it almost seems like Tomiko is like his only friend in the world.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
So, and then we get the really weird, creepy vibes of Shindo would really like Tomiko to be a real boy, you know?
Yeah, which I was like, when we got to that part where, like, Shindo wants the powers to make Tomiko, like, a real person.
Yeah.
I was like, why not just go get a real doll or just a real girlfriend? You know, we can solve this problem right here, you know? Like, he's obviously popular enough and the girls like him. But, like, is it, like, he seems to have such a, like, a strong bond with this doll. Or, because, you know, the doll was with him through all, thick and thin, through all the hard stuff with his dad. Like, it's just so odd to think about. Like, I don't want to say it's like a conundrum.
Yeah.
Or, like, because it's so weird. Because he's, like, it's like his two lives aren't meeting with one another and gelling. So, like, he's almost like he's living, like, a lie, being, like, Mr. Popular, good at sports, good at school, you know, all this stuff. And then, like, he's like, oh, you know, I just want my friend over here that I've been with for, like, 16 years or whatever, you know? You know, I just want her to be a real girl so I can fuck her. That's what I got out from this story arc. Because they even make mention of it at one.
I don't know if I can say you're wrong.
Because, like,
sad part.
They make, like, mention of it before, like, where, like, he's, like, talking to her. And I think he, like, even, like, potentially, like, took her out on a date before this.
Yeah.
Or they're at, like, a carnival or something. And, like, people are looking at him like, oh, man, that guy is weird. You know, don't be like that weird guy over there. That guy's got some
little kind of doll thing. What the hell?
He's got a doll and they're, like, eating food or something. Which, you know, people do that in real life. I've watched My Strange Addiction. I know what I'm talking about, you know. But yeah, it was so weird to almost took like this sharp, weird left turn in the story, and it made Shindo somewhat of a, like, a sympathetic villain,
right?
In a sense, you know.
Well, and he almost becomes like, Shunpei's like Sasuke, you know, because he does come back and,
yeah,
you know, becomes his friend and works together and all this other stuff, which to me, like, is almost kind of weird because, like, out of all that, you feel like he's got this thing of, like, eternal love for, no matter what, that, you know, Tomiko, he's going to make her into a real girl so that they can get married and do all this other stuff. But then it's almost like somehow in Shunpei defeating him that he's almost like, okay, well, Shunpei is like the person that I should look over and not worry about part of the other stuff.
It's true, because even in this fight, which I love this fight where they try to, like, cut through the hairs, but they can't get through, like, the hair with the chainsaw because it gets tangled up.
Yeah.
That's one point. I love the solution that they find where they end up throwing oil on the hair of Tomoko. Yeah. And like they basically like light it on fire.
Oh my gosh. Like, and then I mean Shindo's reaction to all that crap.
Yeah, no. And it's really interesting because Shun takes pity on Shindo.
Yeah.
And he doesn't end up like destroying Tomiko. He just like lets them go.
Yeah.
And then we get the interesting revelation that Shindo actually says, you know, because, you know, Shun ends up befriending Shindo. And then we get this interesting scene where Shindo actually notices that Hyde doesn't have a lot of magic left. And he's actually like not like most of the different magical items like that are like the other sorcerers use. Like he has no curse. He seems to have like no cursed object attached to him. And Shun doesn't control Hyde whatsoever.
Right.
Which is interesting. And I love how like, you know how like they show battle damage within like other shonen mangas where it's like a little bit of blood and like some, like dirt rubbed on him. I like it that like the stuffing is coming out of Hyde.
Right.
Like I like that touch of like it, like battle damage. That's such a nice unique touch.
See, and one of the other things like piggybacking off of that that I really like is like the team dynamic that we get going on soon. Because, you know, like we have a teddy bear and then we have this little geisha doll. And then later on we get like a Spanish like little skeleton doll thingy. And then a little like wooden knight figure or something, and you're like, we got like a bunch of little things that like, you know, and it's kind of funny like when they're building that team of people, you're kind of like, do those seem like that should work together?
Yeah, I don't know,
because really you would think like at some point like the monkey or the Jack in the Box seems a little closer to a teddy bear than the other ones, but I do like the diversity of how we got all those other ones in there.
Yeah. And eventually, if we ever get to the rest of the volumes, you know, we'll get into that, you know?
Yeah.
But I do like how it leaves off with, like a little bit of mystery to where, you know, oh, like, what could happen to Hyde? And, like, or what's going to happen to Hyde? Is Hyde going to be around for this entire book, you know, this entire series? Why doesn't he have like as much magic as, you know, he should? You know, what's going to happen if he loses his magic? Is he going to die?
Right.
You know, which it leaves you with that like wanting more. And I feel like this first volume,
and what's going to come next?
Yeah. And what's going to come next? You know, it leaves you on a really big cliffhanger, I feel like. And I feel like that this volume left me with wanting more, and obviously I'm going to read the rest of it eventually. But I think it flowed very nicely from each battle to battle, and it got us into this world. I left me with a bunch of questions that I feel like will get answered soon, but it does what a first volume does to me. I feel like it hooked me.
Did you invested?
It got me invested in a story, you know. I feel like I wasn't really bogged down too much with like with magical mumbo jumbo. I liked the characters. I liked the characters. I felt like they were all fun and unique. The character design was like off the wall crazy sometimes. The only complaint that I personally have, and I feel like it does get better in the last story arc in this first volume, is the beginning where Shu basically acts like a blubbering baby, and like a scaredy cat. Like, but I don't like that fact that he's like a blubbering baby, I think he should have been sort of scared for like the first chapter or whatever, and like slowly evolve, but he kind of didn't really evolve too much until the last couple chapters.
Yeah.
Where he even like, he like outsmarted the guy and, you know, used the tricks of the trade that he learned. So he like, he acted like he was a, like a blubbering baby, but in reality, like, oh, you know, I kind of got this at this point because he's trained. Like, I like that character growth, but I hate the fact that he's like a whiny butt.
Like, I agree. And yeah. And I know that it's for this, it almost seems like we're in that coming of age story for like him to grow up.
Yeah.
And do a lot better. Just because like a bunch of this stuff. Yeah.
No. Yeah, and I agree as well. Like it very much is a coming of age. Like I do kind of like it that he has, like, he has to work at it. He has all this power, but he doesn't know what to do with it. And I really hope we do get some really strong character growth. Like, if he continues to be a whiny brat or a butt, you know, I don't know if I would read it, the whole thing. Like, if he if he continues to be typical Deku, I don't know if I would want to read it.
Yeah, but I mean, it does have a good even flow, and as that stuff goes on, it gets better. You know, there are more things that we find out, and like, more advanced moves that we haven't necessarily seen yet, and you know,
now
the power of friendship and
power of friendship. Now, you said to me before you started recording that you felt like there wasn't like a lot of meat on the bone for this particular volume,
right?
Do you want to like elaborate on that?
So I feel like there wasn't a lot of meat because, and I'm going to relate this to Supernatural.
Okay.
I felt like we kind of like jumped into almost a monster of the week thing, which is perfectly fine. People enjoy that stuff.
Yeah.
But it didn't really progress the beginning of the story that much in outcomes of other volumes, or like close to the end of this, I would say. Because whenever we fought Antonio and Monkey and Childski and all that, like, we had these guys and they, you knew that they were kind of one and done, so it wasn't going to advance things very far. Yeah. And both of those fights kind of almost seemed related to each other. Mm-hmm. Except where, like, this is the introduction of Hyde, and this is where, hey, you know, Shun, you can make a barrier. There wasn't a lot more going on with that. Of course, it kind of gives us the roots of, hey, there's the six, but until we really get into that, you know, I don't think we really got very much. Shindo really is, I feel like, the biggest piece of that,
mm-hmm.
that we get with part of that, and we get his story. But of course, I feel like that leaves us wanting more to get into another one, because we don't necessarily get a lot of the story for that, you know, because they kind of just lick their wounds and walk away from stuff.
Yeah, with that. No, I can see that, you know.
And like I said, the big protagonist that's in this, we haven't even seen him yet, which, I mean, I guess is a good thing for the first volume, but I feel like not a lot of stuff kicks off until we see that guy.
Until we possibly get to volume two.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this laid the groundwork for stuff to come.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a pretty good introduction to the world.
And it kind of makes me think about like what you said, like last week whenever we covered the Pokemon one, and how like the first episode was just kind of but then as you go through the rest of the episodes, like, it gets better, So I kind of felt like, in a way, Hiding Closer is kind of like that first episode of Pokemon Connoisseurs, or whatever it was called. Concierge. Yeah. Because of things like that, you know, it's laying the groundwork, but I don't really feel like in the milestone of what we've covered that we've went very far.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. Like, I don't feel like we went very far, but I feel like this could build up to something pretty good in like a fun like Shonen Jump battle Shonen way.
Yeah,
like I could see this like potentially taking routes, maybe kind of like Yu Yu Hakusho almost did. You know, like Yu Yu Hakusho started off kind of slow, and then it grew. Like every little arc, it grew a little bit more, type of thing. You know, that's how I personally feel.
Well, and see, that's the other thing that I was saying. Like, we haven't gotten the guy in the window yet, because whenever that happens, we almost kind of turn this into a mystery. And right now, we've kind of seen everything. Like, sure, we had like the jump scare moments with the monkey, and of course, like the Jack in the Box coming out of nowhere, and then it kind of got watered down a little bit, you know, with, you know, we fought a doll that used its hair, but everything was kind of like there with that one. And when we get this other guy, it's kind of like, oh shit, you know, like we don't know who he is for like ever, but we do know that he is kind of the person that has told all these other people later on, like, hey, Shun is the heir of this, you know, so he's kind of the reason. And I think giving us a big bad guy that's not like a one and done or going to become an ally is really what's going to fuel the rest of the book for us to enjoy it.
Yeah, I can see that. You always need your big bad in a book, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, one thing I do like, I do like the show, like the battle wounds for like the stuffed animals and stuff. That's one thing I do like. Yes. And I like there was almost like a little bit of like a body horror aspect to that. Like whenever like the dolls and stuff would come to life, I got like a sense of like horror, like Chucky almost.
Yeah.
In a sense. And I really liked that they added that into this. Yeah. Cause it's something that like I wasn't expecting. Like these like dolls are like kind of terrifying almost. Like kind of like they're terrifying to like they, it's just oddly unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and the attention to detail for part of that is, I think, another thing that I really like.
Yes.
Especially like going from reading stuff for Zom 100. I mean, I've already read this before, but going back into reading it after like seeing and reading like Zom 100. Zom 100 almost kind of seems like, you know, like just like your everyday like B zombie movie. And then you read something like this and you're kind of like, well, shit, you know, like this is like, you know, an A in your face kind of horror movie, you know, kind of thing like that. Like, you know,
I really like the art in this and the art direction. Like, cause this book is solely him. With Zom 100 and like Alice in Borderlands, I believe he only wrote those books.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he did like character design or anything like that, or helped like do like, you know, character design and like world building for those books. But I do know that like there was another artist for those books.
Yeah.
So he didn't do those, which is, he didn't do the art for those, I want to say. And it's interesting to see like his art style like is different than those.
Yeah.
And like, see, it has a very really distinct art style.
I really wonder if he'd ever go back and have something more come out of this, like he's had, because, you know, Alice in Borderlands has become a live action thing, and Zom 100 is like, you know, a pretty big anime, I would say.
Yeah.
But would he ever go back and say, hey, you know, let's do like a live action Hidden Closer, or let's do this or that, you know?
Yeah.
And going off of like what we've talked about, you know, we've seen some pretty shitty live actions. So, you know, I feel like this would be a really fun one to watch, you know?
Like this is this series is like readily available. Like you can get it on like the Viz app.
Yeah.
And stuff, and like Shonen Jump app, it's on there. Even though it's published by Shonen Sunday, you know, you can still buy new volumes of this series. Like, it's not hard to find at all.
Right.
I think I ended up picking up like all the other volumes for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And like, it's, I wish people knew more about Hidden Closer. Because I really, really do feel like it's like a hidden, a real like hidden gem when it comes to manga.
Well, I mean,
when it comes to shonen,
physical copies are probably going to be somebody's white whale because they're going to be hard to find.
Maybe, who knows? But like, I would say it's a hidden gem for shonen battle manga. Because, you know, everybody talks about, like, the big ones, you know?
Yeah.
But nobody really talks about anything else unless it's, like, super popular.
Right.
I do hope this gets more light shined on it because of Zom 100 and Alice in Borderlands. Like, maybe so, they'll go back
because... Because of the Otakuology podcast.
Because of the Otakuology podcast. But, like, he's done, like, two other... I think he's done like a one shot and like another series.
Yeah.
And like those haven't even come out over here. Yeah. So it's interesting to see like, and he hasn't even done that much work either.
Yeah.
It's only been a few series over the past couple years. But yeah, do you have any final thoughts? What would you rate this book?
I would probably give this one at the current moment, maybe like somewhere between like a 3.5 and a 4.
I would give it a solid 4.
Yeah.
Personally. Like, yeah. I really enjoyed it, even though, like, I'm not your typical shonen fan.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a huge fan of, like, battle shonen.
Right.
The only real battle shonen that I actually really like is Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
But this one, it subverted my expectations. I really did enjoy it. It's fun. It's creative. I love the little details that they put in for each little like doll, or and like I like that. Like, you know, like one thing that I really like is like Hyde's eyes are like buttons, and like how to see like the
Coraline-ish.
Like, what?
Very Coraline-ish.
Very Coraline-ish, yes. Very Coraline-ish. And like I like the way that they work together, like this like a almost like a buddy cop type of situation. It's fun. It's a fun read. I recommend it. I think people will be pleasantly surprised when they read it.
Yeah.
And how like different it is to your typical shonen. Like it still has all those shonen tropes and elements to it. When it comes to battle stuff, I'm really hoping we don't get like the shonen power creep.
Yeah.
In late, like when I read like later volumes and stuff. But I mean, it's fun. It's a fun read. I recommend it. And yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah.
I have to say. But yeah. So I'm going to say,
yeah.
So I'm going to say thank you for watching. It's been a fun. I really enjoyed talking about manga again. It was fun to get back into that, you know, that little mindset to talk about manga. But yeah, we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Make sure to rate and review the podcast, share the podcast, tell your friends. If you want us to review something, let us know and we'll try to review it for the podcast. And, reach out to us on our Instagram, Otakuology Podcast, and we'll see you guys next Tuesday.
See you. see you next Tuesday.